Just over a week ago, the near naked body of Anne-Marie Foy was found dumped in bushes on a street in Liverpool's red light district. She'd been strangled and beaten to death. 4 weeks earlier, she'd been sat in front of me, telling me about her ambition to kick the downward spiral of drugs and vice, an interview that now takes on new significance.
You never safe. Every car you get into, you don't know whether you're going to get out of it. It's dangerous all the time. You don't realise how dangerous, and me of all people do realise, because I have been in situations where I've nearly died. I was put into a van, tied up, all my face cut everywhere, all my eyes were cut open, or got them stitched, and I was in a bad way. I had to jump out of the van going 40 miles an hour on the dock roads, and I nearly lost my life then.
Tragically, those words were all too ominous. When I first thought about investigating Liverpool's underworld, I never imagined where it would lead me. It's haunting to hear Anne-Marie's voice again, but her story is like that of so many others. These are normal people living in an abnormal world.
I got my throat cut and attempted murder on me. And Anne Paddy, who got murdered and found them in bags last year, she got murdered, she went missing from my house. My friend Anne-Marie, someone tried to cut her nipples off.
About 8 o'clock tonight, I picked a guy up and took him down where to take him right, and he tried to rape me.
If you're going into a hotel, it's 40 quid, 25 for sex, 15 for a suck, and it's 10 for a hand job. I've got no other way of funding my habit. I can't shoplift, I'm like a bag of nips. So the only thing I can do is sell myself.
Helen, Susie and Virginia are just 3 of the 100 or so women who sell sex on Liverpool streets. Tonight, we'll hear more from the Vice Girls themselves, the support groups that try to keep them safe, the police and the punters who use them. It's a world most of you just won't believe.
We've been smoking crack, and if I wasn't doing heroin, I wouldn't be out on the streets. There's one thing I want to do is get off the drugs.
I just want to get off them. I'm fucking honest. I'm fucking honest.
Virginia, because you're using the rocks, it's going to make it worse, babe. It's going to feel a lot worse because of the...
This is Red Light Liverpool.
Well, I've come out with Inspector Jeremy Harris tonight. We've been given special access by the police to see what really goes on in the world of vice in Liverpool. We're currently in a police riot van making our way around the north of the city, currently in Walton. I've got to say, I am quite shocked, really. We've already seen several prostitutes plying their trade. It's only about 8 o'clock in the evening, so it is still light. As I'm speaking, there's, three girls, I'd say, just 100 or so yards up the road. Not really deterred by the van, though, which is a bit of a surprise to me. No doubt they've all got their own tragic stories, though, about how they ended up doing this tonight. It really is the lowest ebb, I would imagine, and hopefully we'll get to hear from a few of them this evening.
We're going on patrol now. We're heading down Walton Lane on our way to an area where there is quite a lot of concern from members of the public about sex workers being on the streets. The main reason they're on the streets is to earn money to pay for drugs, and they leave chaotic lifestyles that no normal person would believe.
I start, say, about 7, 8 o'clock in the night. I go out, get my money, get my drugs, use them, come back out, get more money, go home, use it, come back out. And that goes on till like 5, and sometimes I'm still out at 6 in the morning. And then at 6 in the morning, I'll get enough money to get me through the day.
The first girl we met that night was Helen. It was a job she'd just fallen into.
I was in my friend's house, actually, and people were coming to her house to do business with her and kept asking for me because I didn't work. So the first time I done it was in my friend's house. I'd never done it. I was a little tomboy. I never even slept around before. I'd done the street before I worked the streets. And I still don't sleep around now. I just do my thing for my money.
Mandy had also been working the streets for much of her life as well.
Since the age of 15, I wish I could turn the clock back. It was another girl who coerced me into it. She just said, "I'll teach you the ropes." And I jumped in the car and lost my virginity to a punter.
46, now 25 when I started. It was unbelievable, but you could even do it. It was one of them, well, have I just done that? After it, it's just so easy afterwards. Doing it is like a drug itself, because you know you can just come out and get the money.
I've got 5 kids. My youngest is 10, the oldest is 18, and they don't work crap anymore. Everything's designer. So it cost me a bomb. That's why I do it.
I presume your kids don't know.
No, do you think I work in a club? I'll die if you knew.
Well, they may sound brazen, but they're only human, just like you and me. And it's hard to imagine what goes through their mind when they first go out on the streets.
They're really frightened. They don't know what to expect. I mean, sometimes one or two girls have gone, what shall I do? And we're thinking, you know, we don't sort of know what you to expect.
Kathy White works for the Outreach Project. They drive the streets night after night, trying to get girls out of prostitution.
When we go out, a lot of them now recognise the cars and they come out to us and they're like, oh, there you are, you know, well, you know, we can see you, you know, oh, we're made up your house. Some of them haven't eaten for days. Some of them haven't even had a drink. They actually like to see us out. There was one girl, what was the first time, and she was a nervous wreck. She didn't know what to do. She said, I'm shaking. That's all she kept saying was, I'm shaking, I don't know what to expect. She went out, done her first night. Unfortunately, the punter said, is it your first time? He obviously understood.
And not all the girls are scousers, far from it. And even more surprisingly, many aren't even straight.
They come from all over. They're not just local girls. People assume that because they're working in Liverpool, they're from Liverpool. Well, they're not. They're from all over. As far as Brighton and places like that, they are all over. We were out working and there is quite a few couple lesbians now working the streets. It is part of the norm of their life and that's the way they look at it. It's a job to them. They're going out doing a job and they're getting paid for it and it's easy money and that's the way they look at it. So unfortunately that's how the girls who have been doing it for a long time look at it. It's a job. They don't see it any other way. It's just a job.
Well, I'd probably say I've been out around 45 minutes now with the police in this right van. I'd roughly say I've seen about 5 or 6 girls, I'd say, trying to pick up men. Now, before I came out, I suppose I had a kind of preconceived idea, you might say, about the sort of people who might use prostitutes. I suppose it's the dirty, seedy side of it. You think the clients, you know, would be like that too. Well, I couldn't have been more wrong, really. A lot of these men who've at least inquired about doing business with the girls tonight are well dressed. They're in very nice cars. Just very, very surprising, to be honest. Not at all the sort of people you'd expect to come across when you're driving around a vice zone.
You see these men, they're in sort of, you know, nice expensive cars. They've obviously, you know, they live out in the suburbs, nice homes. I think a lot of it, it's the thrill for the men of being where they are, the danger, because they could go to better places.
That's the view of Mary Lodge. Her daughter, Danielle Moorcroft, originally from Liverpool, worked as a prostitute in Bolton. The pregnant 19-year-old's near-naked body was found in an alley 3 years ago. She'd been battered to death.
It will always go on, and these men will seek it out, because I think a lot of them like the thrill and the idea of what they're doing, you know, in the car. They shouldn't be doing it, and that gives them, you know, a big hit, really.
Her view is echoed by Lynn Matthews, who works alongside Kathy White in the Outreach Project. Back on the streets, I caught up with them as they began their shift.
Well, we're seeing to their needs, basically, you know, providing them with condoms, clean injecting equipment. So it takes a lot for working girls to trust anyone, really, you know, because they're abused in a lot of areas of their life by professionals, by, you know, anyone who comes into contact with them a lot. And they need looking after, they need taking care of. You know, if you're out on the streets on your own, and society really says you don't count, but someone's got to care for them and, you know, make sure that they're healthy and stay well and healthy. You know, I'd be devastated if my child was out on the streets, you know, hustling money so that they can afford just to live and survive. And that's what it's about, really. It's surviving. They don't want to go out and mug old ladies. They don't want to rob people's houses, you know. And it's a very honourable thing that they're doing, you know, because the only ones they're putting at risk are themselves.
But as long as the punters are there, the girls will be too. Lynn says many men just can't resist paying for sex.
You can actually see men playing with themselves as they're driving around, you know. And I think that's part of the excitement. It's, you know, because it's forbidden and it's all quick and, you know, you might get caught and furtive and that. And I think some men like that.
Well, now sitting and parked up in the right van on Walton Lane with Inspector Jeremy Harris, well, we've just witnessed a prostitute approach a man for business. Luckily, he turned her down, which was a wise move. He obviously didn't know we were watching, but I imagine if he'd have taken her up on the offer, that the police would have moved in. Jeremy, just in general, I mean, how do yourselves and your officers deal with the men who use these girls?
If the punters are committing offences of curb crawling, then they'll be arrested. We speak with the media so that there's maximum publicity, because it's obviously very embarrassing. Prostitutes might not be that embarrassed, but curb crawlers, some of them are from quite good backgrounds, married people, married men. They don't want to see the picture in the front page of the Liverpool Echo.
So where does the business come from? Men with families, good jobs and nice homes are big clients. But there's also a trend developing amongst the younger generation. Helen and Anne-Marie have been quick to pick up on it.
It's fashionable at the moment. Young lads will come out and people who have take coke, they'll come and get the girls, sneak away and get the girls, and they'll take you like to a hotel room, or they'll say, have you got a place, and you go back and spend about £2,000 on rocks, like over 2 days, and then they'll go back away to their own life where nobody knows they even have a rock.
There is quite a lot of young lads, and some of them are like decent looking lads. You wouldn't think that these have to, you know, get out there for girls. I think it's the buzz of it. It's like, I met a lad last week, it was his first time, and he was saying, oh, you know, all my mates have been telling me about it, and he said, oh, I thought it'd come down, and he was only a young lad.
Talk me through how a punter is approaching you in a car. I mean, first of all, how do you know they're looking for business, and how does the conversation go?
It's usually you ask them, they don't usually ask you, but usually, you know, you approach them. You just tend to know who are punters and who aren't punters. Like, the ones in the car, you can tell straight away when you've seen them drive around more than once. And, you know, when they look at you, you know they're looking for business. And even the ones who are on foot, you know, who straight away who is looking for business and who's not. It just stands out a mile. You think the people in the big flash cars would have more money, but it doesn't work out that way. They're the minge bags, they're the ones who don't want to pay the money.
So, while we're talking money, what exactly do you get for your cash?
If you're going into a hotel, it's 40 quid. It's 25 for sex, 15 for the suck, and it's 10 for a land job.
I charge stars at 20, like getting a car for less than 20. And then, like, anything upwards.
So 20 would get you?
That would get you, like, hurdle. But, you know, sometimes you're lucky. You know, you get some good ones, and, you know, you can get out of a car with, like, £50, £60. So you just got to look out for the ones who, like, don't know the prices, and you will pay it extra.
Well, one thing's for certain, whether they're prepared to stump up the cash or not, there's one thing all the men seem to want when they get a girl off the street. Here's Cathy White from the Outreach Project.
It's fresh face. The older working girls will say that, you know, fresh face, but you won't be for long, and then they'll go on to someone else. One of the older girls happened to say to this young girl, you're fresh meat, that's all you are. You're fresh meat for now, you wait. You're only fresh meat for so long, you'll be sorry, just turn away.
For obvious reasons, most punters we asked wouldn't come on to tell their side. But this man, John, agreed to talk, providing we changed his name and protected his identity.
So, John, we'll use the name John. That's obviously not your real name. We're going to protect your identity. Just tell us about when you first decided that you wanted to go with a prostitute.
Well, I was on a business trip to the Far East. I go away quite a lot on business, and it wasn't really something I'd ever thought of. You know, I'm married and what I consider happily married. I think it was just one of those things of, you know, I was away with the lads. Most of them, I'd say, probably been with girls before. And I'd had a few drinks, and I decided, I'd get a girl. It's not something I'm proud of, but that's the thing that starts everything off, really, you know, and still use girls now, which, again, I'm not particularly proud of.
So I suppose the obvious question is, if you're not proud of going with these girls, you don't feel good about yourself when you do it, then why do you do it? Why do you continue to do it?
I think it's really the thing of, once you've done it, it sort of spirals. I'd say most blokes I know, they either do it and think never again, or they do it and think want more. And I was one of those who wanted more. The attraction is definitely, I think, with my friends, it's like, you know, something you're not supposed to be doing. I know everyone says it's seedy, which, you know, I don't like that, but I guess maybe it's the thing of, you're not supposed to be doing it. And because it's so frowned upon and wrong, if you like, then it draws you in a bit more and makes it harder to stop.
I think a lot of men we've spoke to, they say they get sort of a buzz from it. Was that the case with yourself, or, you know, did you feel guilty or ashamed even afterwards?
It was a buzz, yeah, definitely a buzz. I wasn't ashamed at all, because all my colleagues had done before, and they'd all got girls that night. And I think it really was just a lads thing, you know. When I got home, I thought about it, and I didn't feel proud of it. But I think because it was so far away, it was different, and I could put it out of my mind easier.
What about here in Liverpool? Have you ever picked up a girl off the streets here?
Yeah, I have. I have done it here only twice. I did find it quite frightening, to be honest. You've got the worry of someone seeing your car, or even, God forbid, you're picking up someone who knows you. There are all sorts of things you've got to think about.
For girls who work on the streets, John is the sort of punter they do want. Others are far more sinister. The recent murder of Anne-Marie Foy shows that all too clearly. Tragically, that's the latest in a long line of attacks.
Julie Filmy got murdered a long time ago. She's my friend, and I was in the papers. I was the first person to get took in for a murder. 2 weeks later, I got my throat cut and attempted murder on me. Hannah Paddy, who got murdered and found in bags last year, she lived with me for a year. She got murdered, she went missing from my house. My friend Anne-Marie, underneath both her breasts, she got stitches right underneath both of them. Someone tried to cut her nipples off. She had a noose round the neck, down to her hands, behind the back, down to her feet, and every time she struggled, it got tighter and tighter on her neck. So two murders, and attempted murder on me, and countless rapes and everything. You see all sorts, yeah.
You've got a mark on your arm there. What happened there?
Well, a punter picked me up, and then he wanted his money back. So I forfeited my life and forfeited the money. Went to put the money down my pants, and he wrestled with me. He's put his knee on my throat, and I've really been scared for my life.
You just showed me a huge bump in your skull there. What happened there?
Oh, I got hit with a hammer. 5 hammers to my head because of another girl, mistaken identity. Next time, won't be so lucky.
About 8 o'clock tonight, I come out about 12:07, about 8 o'clock, I picked a guy up and took him down where to take him, right? And he tried to rape me. He says, I'll pay you after. So I said, no, we don't do that, we can pay first. He went, no, that's happened to me before, and you've robbed me and run away. And I said, no, he said, I'm not going to do that. I said, I'm not like that. I said, just pay me first. So he touched me pocket of my coat. He went, you ought to put the money in your coat. I went, you hear that? And I'm not daft. I said, you know, are you going to pay me? He went, come here and grab me. But I twirled away from him, and I run. I grabbed my phone out of my pocket, and I just said, right, that's, you know, you're getting nicked now. That's it, I'm phoning the police. I didn't expect it from a walking guy on a university campus in daylight. A few years ago, I got raped just down the bottom of, not this road, down the bottom by the spa. And it was, you know what I mean, it was horrible, you know what I mean, it was just horrible. They got the lad the same night, and he was a known sex offender. He'd been out of jail 6 weeks on license for the same thing. I was scared, because I knew he weren't gonna stop. And I thought, nah, I've got to do something here. I got this strength anyway, and he grabbed me, and I went like that, pushed him away, and I went, come on then, and bit his fingers. Only for the fact that I bit his fingers, I wouldn't have got away. So he's gone down, ah, la, la, la. I run, and I was naked from the waist down.
It's just like with rape, I mean, it's almost like people have this stupid conception that you girls don't have the right to say no.
Thank you. That's what the police were saying to me. They were saying to me, they're going to rip you. They said, and the fact is, because you're working on the streets, they said they're going to, you know what I mean? And I said, well, I said, they can say, do whatever. I said, but I will stand on that witness box and I will tell them what he done to me. Then he pleaded guilty a couple of days before it, and he was given a life sentence. I do not get in the car. If there's one person in the car, I'll get in the car. But if there's 2, 3, 4, I ain't getting in it. Whether you're giving me loads and loads of money, do you know what I mean, and all that, yeah?
But it's not just at night these girls get attacked. Far from it. An afternoon spent at the Outreach Project's base on Stanley Street gave me proof.
We've just got a fax through regarding one of the working girls that's just been picked up and being taken back to a house. where apparently his wife and kids were running around and beat her up. She's ended up in hospital, and now we've been told she needs plastic surgery. She's been beaten up that much. Some of these punters pick them up and take them back to their own places, and it's constantly happened lately now that the punters are actually sort of turning nasty.
This would have happened, I mean, probably in the past couple of hours, so probably about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, it has happened about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The girls are working all around the clock. They're not just working overnight. They work early hours, they work early morning, and they work midday.
Clearly, it's a major job for the police. I joined Inspector Jeremy Harris and his team on a routine patrol of the red light area. Their first job, to stop a man who just asked a girl for business. Luckily, she turned him down because the consequences could have been devastating.
The officer who's gone after him has recovered this, which is a flick knife. A dangerous weapon with a really nasty looking blade on it. It actually is disguised as a lighter. It looks like a lighter, but it's obviously quite a dangerous weapon. He's been a little bit obstructive there. He has been handcuffed. He has been told that he's under arrest, so I just need to get on with that for the time being.
That was just one of the many incidents the police prevent every night. Sometimes they're powerless to help. Constable Paul Shannon recalls a time he reached a victim just after an attack.
That was a female prostitute who'd been assaulted by one of her clients. She'd gone behind a garage to do business with a client, and he'd basically assaulted her with a breeze block, which split her head clean open, and she ended up spending the best part of 2 weeks in the room. But she had a huge gash right across the forehead from one side to the other where she'd been hit with a breeze block.
And when you spoke to her afterwards, I mean, how was she? I presume very traumatised.
Very, very traumatised. But willing enough to go back out again once she was fit and well.
The bad news for the working girls is the violence is getting worse. Cathy White from the Outreach Project says multiple assaults are now commonplace.
A couple of punters who were walking punters will actually have a mate waiting around the corner, a mate or two. The girl will actually go around the corner and there could be a couple of mates waiting. Then all of a sudden there's one, two, three, four of them. They're waiting and they're actually gang raping them then. The poor girl hasn't got a chance.
Well, it sounds hard to believe, but often the girls who get away from an attack with just a few weeks in a hospital bed are the lucky ones. Lynn Matthews from the Outreach Project says the fates of others are far worse.
I was working when Linda Donaldson was murdered, and she was found in a field with her head cut off, her breasts missing. They tried to sever her legs, very, very badly mutilated, and she was a lovely girl, very safe, dead caring over other working girls, you know, and it was like devastating to know that, you know, she'd actually been mutilated and treated like that, and they still haven't got the fella who done it.
Countless rapes, assaults, and the more horrific cases like the double murder of two working girls in Everton 2 years ago. The dangers are more than apparent. But one of the problems is the areas the girls are working in. The Outreach Project took me out to explore Liverpool's red light zone.
It's about 8 o'clock now on a just normal Wednesday night. It is going to start getting darker, isn't it? Is that when more of them will venture out?
Yeah, well, you know, there's girls that work different times through the day, you know, because there's girls who might work very early in the morning to catch the men going to work, you know. I mean, some men like a quick bump before they go to the office. Then there's some that work through the day, you know, because some women prefer to work through the day because they feel it's safer.
And I mean, we're going around an industrial part of Liverpool now, near sort of the Jamaica Street area. I mean, it looks okay now in the light, but in the dark, I imagine this would be a very intimidating place.
Very, yeah, very. I mean, you know, these women are working in the shadows with very little protection. They're open to all kinds of abuse. They get abused by kids sometimes. A lot of them have been beaten up by gangs of kids, you know.
If they got into trouble in an area like this or the one we've just passed through, I mean, even if they scream, there's no one to come and help them.
Years ago, when they did work around the Cannon Street area, Hope Street, Gambia Terrace way, you know, some of the residents were great, and, you know, they would go to the girls' assistance, and the girls had actually, you know, when kids had gone missing, had helped find kids and things like that, and there was, you know, the kind of, like a symbiotic kind of relationship, really. They lived alongside each other. But now some of the areas that the girls have been driven into, it's not safe for them, you know, and you can't sort of forget that there is a lot of weird men who will roam these red light areas. I mean, look at Piece of Sutcliffe, you know. And every time they get in the car, they don't know if that's going to be, you know, the last car they're ever going to get in their lives.
So why do the girls put themselves through it? Speak to them all and you'll get a one-word answer.
Drugs, it's drugs. Drugs makes you go back to it all the time. drugs made me go on the street, yeah.
You still keep doing it for the drugs. It's, you know, known, but you've got to get in that car and do what you've got to do, you know, to be normal, to feel normal, because without the drugs, you're really sick.
If I'd been smoking crack and if I wasn't doing heroin, I wouldn't be out on the streets because of me drugs and that. I've got no other way of funding my habit. The only thing I can do is sell myself.
It's a grim reality, isn't it? Forced to sell your own body to fund a drugs habit that could end up killing you anyway. Helen and Anne-Marie have been using since they were teenagers.
What drugs are you using at the moment? Are you using at the moment?
Heroin and crack cocaine. You're frightened to go asleep, because if you go asleep, you miss an house, and, you know, you're waking up and you're ill.
I started smoking weed, and then I went nuts on ease and coke, and then I started taking heroin to make me to take the paranoid away.
How young were you when you started then?
I started taking ease when I was about 15. I didn't start heroin until I was about 19, and crack when I was about 21. You go back to it all the time. As soon as something bad happens, you go back to it.
And their habits don't just harm themselves, it destroys families. Here's Mandy and Helen.
They just disown me now.
Totally, you have no contact with them?
Not even with my kids. And I wish I could see them again just for an hour or two. My eldest is 12 now. Jessica, her name is. Mum, I love you, and tell her, give the kids a kiss from me, Jessica, Molly and Megan.
Yeah, my family know. My family know everything about me. I'm not going to lie to them and make it even harder for them. Well, they're devastated. They come from a really nice family. All my family all work, and they've all got really good jobs and nice houses, and there's me. I don't know what happened to me, I don't know. But come from a really nice family. I can always go back to them and need them, but you distance yourself from them because you feel ashamed, you feel embarrassed, and you don't want to put your troubles on them. So you keep away. Every now and then, when things are good and I look good and I've got a few good, I'll go and see my family and say I'm okay, and like paint a different picture to them. Because you don't want them sitting there worrying anymore, do you?
Your son, have you explained to him, like, what you do?
No, he's been protected from it all. He lives in the Netherlands, and I come up here and he doesn't know anything about it yet. That's what I'm dreading. I just don't want him to know. I want to be able to go and see him when I'm taking nothing and I'm not on the street still and be able to explain to him afterwards, but I don't want him to see me in a mess.
Many also can't hold down serious relationships because of the nature of their jobs, and trust is a major issue.
I can't have normal relationships because what we see in men, it makes you see a side of men that is there, and something like, to disgust you. And I couldn't have a normal relationship with a man. You know, the experiences I've had and I've seen what they're like. You know, I just think some of them are low.
Virginia has got a boyfriend, but their relationship is a volatile one.
He's sort of like got me under control, doesn't like me going out. When I do go out, he gets jealous when I go out because we have sex, and he doesn't like the fact of me going out and somebody touching me. And not just that, you see, with my fella being an Arab, they have different beliefs. I've only been with them a year. But in that year, I could say I'm starting to realise that there's more to life than getting up and taking drugs.
Kathy White from the Outreach Project says for the girls with boyfriends, working the streets is often their part in a tragic deal between the pair.
Those who are grafting are the day, and the girls who are grafting are nice. That's the way they look at it anyway. So, I mean, they've got to sort of pay their way, whatever it be for, they still have to pay their way, and that's the way they look at it. So it's nothing to them, really. I mean, the fellas, as I say, they've made their money in the day, so they go and make days of a night.
Perhaps one of the most heartbreaking stories I came across was that of Natalie. Pregnant with twins, I waited with Constable Kevin Chatterton as he tried to persuade her to go home.
You're pregnant, aren't you? You shouldn't be working anyway, for the sake of your kid. How much gone are you?
I'm only 3 months, but I'm having twins.
Uh-huh. You're having twins and you're working. It's not good, is it, mate?
I know, but...
You've had some tonight as well, haven't you?
When you've got a habit, like, it's hard.
What have you had tonight?
I mean, not, and I've had two cans of Tennent's and two bags and two stone, I reckon. That's about it.
Not good, is it? You know what that's doing to your kid?
I know.
Any idea? No?
I know.
Do you want to help your kid or what?
Yeah, I do.
Just think about it, mate.
I do think about it. My mum brought me up when she was on gears, really.
Where are you from originally?
From Liverpool. I met a sugar daddy when I was 16. He took me to the Lake District, then brought me in for the college, and then I moved to London, and then back here.
So. Is he looking out for you, fella, is he?
Yeah. He doesn't look after me, mate.
Does he? Doesn't look after you enough to let you work when you're pregnant with his kids. Oh, he's his kids. He's watching you go for the fellas when you're pregnant with his kids.
I don't do sex, though.
makes no difference, does it?
It doesn't.
All it takes is one of the punches in the stomach, innit?
I know, but they're not like that.
They are.
They're not.
Okay, then. Right. When he's finished, go home. See you later.
But home for Natalie that night wasn't to be her bed. It was a police cell in St Anne Street. It turns out she was wanted on warrants for allegedly assaulting a police officer.
That's our call down on the station, Natalie, come here.
Jade, Kevin, don't bother coming down tonight. Just go to sleep and I'll see you in the morning.
I'll be there for the morning.
Yeah. Go and have some sweets and sort yourself out and whatever.
We'll take Natalie to St Anne Street custody suite. She's wanted on a warrant for assaulting a police officer. I don't know the circumstances of that.
I drank a lot of sherry and a lot of cider. Yeah, I was a bit drunk. I didn't mean to. At the end of the day, I was very fixed. So.
There you go. We'll take her. We'll lodge her. She'll be there overnight, and she'll have to appear at the magistrate's court in the morning. She doesn't look very well. Are you a drug addict or anything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I must say, mate, I'm the best girl that works out there. Yeah, I'm the only one that doesn't look like a smacker out there, and I'm the only one that doesn't look like a prostitute.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, and I know that, so you can't say that it was quite obvious. I was sat down in the bus stop, so you can't even say that to me.
I didn't say that it was obvious. I said it's obvious because people are hanging around in bus stops.
Yeah, it's obvious because we're in the red light area, but at the end of the day, do you know what I mean? I've got to be the best girl that works at it. Do you know what I mean? I know I don't want to like smack her, I'm only young, but you know what I mean? I could be a student that was coming out of college quite late and catching a bus, and you were pulling me for prostitution when I have done nothing wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to your boyfriend and he said what you were doing there. I don't know what you said to these officers. But we talked to you, didn't we?
Yeah, he's asked me and I thought I was supposed to. He didn't know.
Yeah.
So it's not obvious, is it?
Okay, right. So.
Nice one.
Anyway.
In general, do you feel your relationship with the police is quite good or...?
Well, I never came off to the police like that. Time I've done assault on the police officers. I didn't mean to. I drank a lot of sherry and a lot of cider and I just got out of court, do you know what I mean? And I was a bit pissed off, so that's what happened. I didn't assault them, I didn't hit them or anything, it was just the officer kept squeezing my handcuffs, so I scratched his hands, and the other one, as I was kicking out, because I didn't want to be arrested, I kicked him in the bollocks, and I didn't mean to, I didn't do it on purpose, do you know what I mean? So.
How long have you been out tonight?
About, since half nine. So, quite early. It's half seven, 2.5 hours been out.
Just past half 10 now, so I mean, is it quite like annoying for you that you're getting taken off the streets early, or were you planning on going home soon?
Well, no, I was going to go home anyway. I mean, I don't need to work. I do use, but I don't use all the time.
You're pregnant as well, though?
Yeah, 3 months. I'm having twins as well. Yeah, I mean, I want more of a better upbringing for my children, do you know what I mean? Definitely. But I've already said to my fiancé that if I'm going to be working in another month, I'm just going to leave. I'll just go back to London and live with my dad and get off everything. Do you know what I mean? I don't want my kids being brought up in this world.
What gear are you using at the moment, though?
Heroin and crack.
And have you used today?
Yeah. I've had two of each today. The way I see it, if I get off the gear early enough before I have my pregnancy, hopefully the baby will be okay.
The tragic fact is, though, all these girls, including Natalie, have tried to get off drugs, and each one has their own heartbreaking tale about trying to get clean. Can you ever see a time when you're going to get out of this?
I hope so. I nearly done it last year, a year and a half ago. I was doing really well, and the first time I had my own house and my own, just doing like basic things like your own things in your own bathroom and your own clothes in your drawer. It's like just a dream to me again now. I'd worked like way towards it last year and a half ago, just before my baby died, and I had everything together. All that was literally to be done was to have the baby, and he died now before he's born. It was like a bad joke. It was like the rest of it. Just everything seems to go wrong. I don't know why.
I got clean for 2.5 years and then I had a relapse. I've just come back again after being clean for 2.5 years and I've got like a really bad guilt trip. I was doing really well and I've sort of really gone overboard, you know, to take all the guilt away. So now I am really at the stage where I'm using, you know, quite a lot.
What sort of money are we talking about a day?
Talking about £200-300 from like through the day and right through early hours of the morning. And nothing has changed from when I was clean for 2.5 years, and when I come back I thought, sort out might be different, but it hasn't, nothing changes. It's all the same, everyone doing the same thing day in, day out, and I'm just gutted for them back here.
For most of these girls, it just seems that every time they get back on their feet, something pulls them back down into the gutter. Virginia's story can't fail to touch you. She's so determined not to scrounge off the state for her habit, she's refused dole money and benefits for 3 years. The night I met her, she was at a crossroads.
I haven't signed on for 3 years, and I've got an appointment for the job interview on Tuesday, so good luck there, do you know what I mean? I hope everything goes good for me, because if there's one thing I want to do is get off the drugs.
I am, I just want to get off them. I'm fucking on this. I'm fucking on this.
Virginia, because you're using the rocks, it's going to make it worse, babe. It's going to feel a lot worse because of the...
You're a survivor. Been doing it for too long, and I'm just sick to death. I'm just the same old crap in the mornings, having drugs, getting 30 years, man. Just had enough.
Yeah.
I've got kids there that are supposed to be a mother, supposed to have my kids, but what? No. My mum doesn't even trust me with my daughter, which I don't blame them.
I really don't blame her, but she
doesn't even help me. She doesn't do nothing. Every time I go into the option, but that's a good bit to say.
Oh, come on.
So there you have it, the painful reality of a life dependent on crack cocaine and heroin to survive. Back out in the riot van, Inspector Jeremy Harris was getting ready to put pregnant Natalie into her cell for the night. He's optimistic of her chances of leaving the drugs behind.
I'm speaking to her boyfriend there at the scene. They're getting together quite a stable lifestyle, although she's still addicted to drugs. He's managed to get off drugs. He's relatively clean, he tells us, and hopefully he's going to encourage her to do the same.
Hopefully, especially with a baby on the way in 6 months. I mean, it's just heartbreaking thinking that she's been using today when she's pregnant.
Yeah, and I think you probably saw as well, she was drunk. She smelled strongly of alcohol. And as I said to you earlier, it's not just the drugs. They will get anything. Alcohol's a drug, so they'll batter the alcohol as well.
The question needs to be asked, though, where are the girls getting these drugs so easily? Surely it seems the key to wiping out prostitution is to get the dealers who drive them to it locked up. Mum of murdered prostitute Danielle Moorcroft couldn't agree more.
You can do tolerance zones, you know, but as long as the drugs problem remains out there, these girls are going to stay out there anyway. That's the root of a lot of it. There is no proper answer. There is no correct answer. The proper answer is trying to get them off the drugs in the first place, and then they won't be there.
Well, I'm still out with them, Inspector Jeremy Harris. We just dropped Natalie off at St. Anne Street police station this evening. She's quite obviously drunk and also had some heroin and crack cocaine, which is tragic considering she's got a baby on the way due at Christmas. Just in terms of the drug problem that is gripping sort of Liverpool's prostitutes, all the girls we've seen tonight have been on drugs, Jeremy. Just tell us the extent of it as far as you're aware.
90% of them, it's accepted, are chaotic drug users who use crack cocaine, heroin, alcohol, methadone. They'll abuse methadone. Some of them will try and inject methadone, which is in the form that they get it from the chemist, shouldn't be injected, and it creates a lot of serious health problems. Some of them create abscesses on their legs, some to the point of becoming amputees.
But is this something, you know, from your point of view, that you feel you are slowly getting to the bottom of and starting to wipe it out?
There's been an awful lot of success with taking out drug dealers. Only in the last 3 weeks we've taken 3 drug dealers out. One had 27 wraps on him, another 40, and another 38 wraps, crack cocaine and heroin. And they're your street dealers, 14, 15 year olds on mountain bikes, motorbikes, in cars. We're looking at taking them out as well.
And when you hear that 14 year old drug dealer on a mountain bike in the street, I mean, most people will just go, oh my God, but it's happening a lot more often than you would realise.
It's happening, yeah, and whilst we are arresting quite a few of them, we can't arrest all of them.
When there's so many people who are out there dealing, I mean, it is so hard for the girls, isn't it, to get off it when drugs are quite readily accessible?
Yeah, and that's why we've got to get them out of the area. So, whilst they're probably going to other areas where there are other drug dealers, they're out of their comfortable environment and they don't know them. So that's what has to be done, just to break the cycle.
They end up becoming like a hamster on a wheel and they can't get off. And they just need somebody to reach out and give them a hand and help them up. And I know if it was my child, I'd be wanting somebody to do that. And I think before anyone judges the women, they should look deep in their hearts and say, would you like your daughter to be in that situation? And if your daughter was in that situation, wouldn't you want somebody to be helping her?
Without a shadow of a doubt, we feel sorry for them. We want to help them. Some of them do have kids, and the kids, because of the way you are when you're hooked on drugs like that, the kids invariably are neglected. What we're trying to do is break the cycle, change people's life, put them in touch with the right people, get them onto schemes where they can be detoxified, get them out of the area where they're on a detox scheme in Wales or out of the city, even if it's Manchester where they have their own issues, they're out of their home environment, and we are breaking the cycle of prostitution.
Inspector Jeremy Harris, the last voice there, his team are out every night trying to ensure something bad doesn't happen, and they've got special tactics to deal with violent offenders.
We put in place things like an ugly mugs brochure, if you like. The prostitutes give us information of who they're concerned about. They take registration numbers and we give them the advice to. And even if they don't give us the registration numbers, if something happens to them, the other girls may well be aware that there are bad people around looking for prostitutes to commit serious offences against.
And they have to react to internal disputes between girls when things get out of hand.
A number of prostitutes have what we call antisocial behaviour orders against them. And this is one way we have of tackling sex workers on the streets. Any criminal behaviour is antisocial, and that actually gives us a power to arrest them if they're on the streets for prostitution without warning. And the sanctions against them are greater than they would be for prostitution. Quite often some of the antisocial behaviour created by sex workers is through girls working on each other's patch, where they fight with each other. Again, if that's in a residential area, creates a lot of fear because it's not a nice thing to happen on your doorstep.
Unfortunately, there are all too many of you in Liverpool who've told us prostitution is happening on your doorstep. Mark Phillips works just off London Road, where several Vice girls ply their trade. He says it's even affecting his son's education.
We had a music exam for the university at the back. I was petrified when I got to place the 5 o'clock exam. I said to them, what am I going to do walking in back? I've got to get to the car park or walk down to the station. I've got to go through all this with a 10-year-old.
And Sarah Edwards runs a betting shop in the area.
We have a stairwell run side of the building. I can guarantee there's been about 3 or 4 occasions where I've gone to go out the door and somebody's been urinating in the doorway or somebody's collapsed in the doorway. I feel very threatened walking up and down London Road and surrounding areas of an evening, sometimes during the day as well, because it is so threatening.
The sad fact is, most of these girls have been driven to residential and business areas because they're too scared to go anywhere else. Councillor Flo Clickers, who's supporting the idea of a tolerance zone in Liverpool, says the girls have been left with little choice in where they work.
Because prostitutes are outside the law, it's actually quite difficult for them to report when they're raped or when they're badly beaten, when they end up in hospital, why they're there, or if they're robbed, for example. When prostitutes feel under threat like that, they will go to areas where they feel safe. And so they've gone to residential areas, now as far afield as Rice Lane in Walton, up to Old Swan and round and into Dingle. It has shifted as the police have come in to clamp down on it, and it's gone to new areas. Unfortunately for the residents, it has become a 24-hour-a-day operation because that's how prostitutes feel safe operating now.
The big question is whether tolerance zones are the answer. The idea is for a handful of areas to be set aside where prostitutes could work in a safer, secure environment. But despite the City Council overwhelmingly voting in favour of them, the plans are all snarled up in government red tape and have little chance of being approved until later next year. If they did get the go-ahead, they'd be used to stop vulnerable young girls getting lured into the sex trade.
Unless somebody is registered with a health provider and over the age of 18, they will not be allowed to work in the zone. And I have to say, I've been astonished at the attitude of some of the so-called collectives of prostitutes, which have said that they don't want this because young people wouldn't be able to work in it. I don't want young people working in prostitution. I don't want children being groomed. I don't want kids of the age of 13 and 14 being pushed into prostitution. prostitution by older men. I want to stop that, and I think that this zone will enable us to do that.
Well, I'm now standing on Jamaica Street. This is an industrial area of Liverpool, just on the outskirts of the city centre, and it's one of the areas the council has considered when they've been looking for a suitable area to put a tolerance zone for prostitutes. Now, it is quite built up around here. There are also houses just around the corner, residential ones. Now, as I mentioned, the Anglican Cathedral is also just a stone's throw away as well. I've been here a couple of hours now just having a chat with the people who work here. Now, they're devastated. Officials have thought about putting a zone on their doorstep.
We employ quite a lot of girls, and I can only see it being a problem for them. They're going to be interfered with. They're going to be stopped and asked, do they want to do business? We're going to bring business people into the city. They're not going to be too impressed. You've got all new students coming around here. What's going to happen to them? What's going to happen to these girls away from home for the first time? You're not going to tell me that they're not going to be stopped, because they are.
I don't know anyone we've spoken to in the whole estate who's in favour of this. I mean, there's hundreds of people work around here, and nobody wants them here. We don't want them here, and we're not happy about it.
I'm really annoyed, to be honest. You know, we're paying £200 a month rates. These prostitutes who don't serve society in any shape or form, I mean, are they going to pay rates? Of a morning, before we would be opening up work of a morning, would be cleaning the place of all the unsavoury bits and bobs. So you're talking about needles and condoms and what have you. I mean, who wants that outside the door, you know, to be confronted with that every morning?
Councillor Clucas is insisting that's one thing they won't have to worry about.
Once the managed zone finished its operation, say at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, a team of people would move in, and what they would do is clean up any of the rubbish left from the prostitution the night before, make sure there were no indication at all that anything had taken place of that sort, and the following day when you went there you wouldn't know it from anything else.
But the business owners aren't the only ones who need convincing. Many of the prostitutes themselves think it wouldn't take off, like Anne-Marie and Helen.
You're in an enclosed area where there's a lot of girls working. You know, when a car stops and one girl's going to think it's for another and the other one's going to run along, it's going to cause a lot of trouble.
I'll try, I'll see what it's like. But people will know even more so where to go, because people go to rob the girls purposely. I was sat in the car on Hampstead Road the other night, some fella pulled up, and next minute his window went through, grabbed his keys out the ignition and said to him, give us your money. My balaclava's on and everything. All the glass was in my face and in my hands, as you can see all the little chippings on my hands, and the poor fella, the thing went right through the window and smacked him in the face, and then, so again, it'll give people a point to go and more trouble.
While the government weigh up the proposals for a zone, top political figures are having their say. Solicitor General Harriet Harman doesn't think a zone would be a good idea.
My own view is I'm not in favour of a controlled zone for prostitution. I think prostitution is exploitation. We're seeing increasing numbers of trafficked women being brought in from Eastern Europe and other parts of the world. It's modern day slavery when that happens, and I don't think the way to go is to legalise it.
But according to Flo Clucas, that's exactly why we need a zone.
There's been a great deal of organised crime activity in relation to prostitution in other areas of the country. London, for example, in brothels, where we've got people being trafficked in from Eastern Europe and effectively being sex slaves in brothels to pay off the cost of their illegal entry. The same is happening in Birmingham. There's some evidence it's happening in Manchester and Leeds and other large cities. We don't have that problem here yet, and I think this may well be a way of stopping it before it starts.
The other big question being posed, though, wouldn't be answered until the zone opened. Namely, would men who currently use prostitutes be willing to admit it enough to drive into a tolerance area? Mum of murdered working girl Danielle Moorcroft and prostitutes Helen and Anne-Marie think not.
A lot of the girls aren't going to like the idea of being watched. You know, a lot of the clients aren't going to like the idea of being watched. They'll find somewhere else to go.
A lot of people aren't going to want to go in there, because a lot of people aren't going to want to know to be seen driving into there. So because it is illegal and because it is a private thing, maybe most men won't want to drive into there.
Me, myself, I don't think that it would personally work. Not just for the girls, it'd be for, you know, the punters as well. Them coming into an area, if it's managed, you know, they're going to be filmed. Anything happens, there's going to be police on the doorstep. Because I've spoke to a few punters about it, and they've said that they wouldn't use it.
So, would the punters use these zones? Well, earlier we spoke to John, a married man who's been using prostitutes for several years.
No, I wouldn't even think about it. You know, it's like advertising. I mean, yeah, I pay for sex, and I mean, I would mind, really mind, if people knew about it at the end of the day, because I'm a married man. I don't want to be driving into somewhere in my car which people might recognise. And so no, it's not something that I'd consider. The new mayors have talked about it, but I very much doubt that they do it either. The whole point is that it is secretive and undercover. And if you're in a zone, it's just the total opposite of that. So no, I wouldn't even think about it.
Other cities around Europe have tried the scheme too. Edinburgh set up a tolerance zone in 1986. Culturally rich, just like Liverpool, they were confident of success. But after 16 years of trading, it was shut down when residents complained that it didn't fit in with the city's image. Something that with 2008 on the horizon, Liverpool surely needs to consider closely. Here's Graham Roberts from Edinburgh Station 4th FM.
The tolerance zone became a no-go area after 8 o'clock at night because any woman who was down there was fair game, if you like, for the cab crawlers in the area. So a lot of people, particularly women, were worried about these tolerance zones. That was the main problem. The Leith area of Edinburgh, where the tolerance zone was set up, it was a growing area, it was a regenerating area. A lot of new housing was built in the area, and of course when the residents started moving in and they had prostitutes wandering about in the streets in the area, they started complaining. The complaints obviously went to the local council. The local council had to look at it and in turn put pressure on the police to bring to bear the laws of the land effectively.
One country well known for its tolerance of prostitution is Holland. In Utrecht, they've set up legal brothels where girls can ply their trade in the safety of regulated premises watched over by police. Here's Officer Peter Valkenberg.
It's working quite well. The women became safer and have a healthier life at the zone. They are not being chased away or hunted down by the police, but they can work on a safe zone.
People in Liverpool have even been there to check it out. Here's one man's view.
Oh, in Utrecht, they have like brothels in streets and stuff. And when we were last over there, we followed me somewhere else. He knows his way around and that. And he was walking ahead of us. And we just went down his side street. I looked to my right, and there's a girl in the window with just like bra and suspenders on, just plying her trade. And it's just taking us normal over there.
One person who's desperately campaigned for safer working environments for the girls is Councillor Steve Radford. He wants legalised brothels like the ones in Utrecht, and he's got strong views on why a legalised zone wouldn't work.
I don't think a managed zone, which if I put it bluntly is just a glorified bonking car park, I don't think that's going to be in the best interest of sexual health. Don't think that's going to give the same security, and I don't think it's going to encourage an environment whereby what people are doing in their private affairs is kept private.
What you're saying there is all very well, but even if it does go into brothels, you've still got the problem of where are we going to put them?
Yes, you have, but I think some of the problems about, certainly when I met some of the mothers from the central parts of Liverpool, they were concerned about that even if there was this car park in the Kempton Street area or other areas, that school children and their youngsters would still pass by and be able to see from a distance the activity going on. Now, you won't have that in a problem if you actually have a brothel behind closed doors, people enter, we could use our discretion how we want it portrayed and where they're located.
Clearly, when it comes to talk of whether to legalise or not, the violence the girls suffer is top of the agenda.
We actually had prostitutes' body parts chopped up and left in the local parks. Now, that really didn't do the city's reputation and tourism much good, and it probably didn't help the sex workers. It is a real live issue. We can moralise for as much as we like, but we actually have to look after citizens' safety, whatever we think of their lifestyle, whatever we have our own personal views on morality, and we have to take prostitution out of the current climate that it's in. I cannot explain to myself why this country has got such a hang-up about prostitution. The real problem is, why hasn't it happened already? It's something we should all be ashamed about.
Well, we've heard from the experts, but at the end of the day, this is your city. What do you think about having a legal zone for prostitution on your streets?
It's going to happen anyway, so I think it should be made safe, definitely.
Well, I think it's a good point if it keeps the girls and the guys away from residential areas.
I think it's disgusting. I just don't agree with it. I'm bringing children up and I don't want them to see that. That's the way of life.
that's how you disrespect yourself.
I think it will be safer for the girls, and also it may take it out of residential areas and stuff like that.
Who's going to want a brothel at the back door? I mean, it's a case of where it's actually going to be. Nobody's going to really want it.
One thing's for sure, the decision needs to be made, and made quickly. Anne-Marie Foy's murder shows there's no time to waste in making this city a safer place for vice girls. There are organisations out there, like the Outreach Project, who want to help them, but there's only so much they can do. The girls' mountainous health problems are just one of the hurdles they've got to try and overcome. I dropped into the free clinic the prostitutes were using that night to find out more.
25 to 10 on the Wednesday night, I'm with Anita Wells, who's an outreach nurse practitioner at the GUM clinic. We're at the Brownlow Drop-In Centre now, where some of the girls are coming. We've had about 10, I'd say, so far. I mean, what are they doing tonight?
Basically, they're coming in, they get a drink, and they've got a chance to chat with myself. I work at the GUM department, so any problems that they're worried about, any infections or anything really, I can do fast track appointments and I can book them into the clinic first thing the next morning if need be. If they've got little problems, we can have a look at them and get them into wherever they need to go into.
Mandy had come into the clinic to pick up some food and clean clothes, and the rest of the night painted a bleak picture for her.
I've just called in for a cup of tea. I'm homeless at the moment, but I would like some help with housing.
It's coming up to what, 10:30 now, 10:40? I mean, are you going to be going back out on the street?
Yeah, probably, because I've got nowhere else to go.
Sadly, Mandy's story is all too typical. Anita says many of the girls are homeless, and with winter approaching, their lives are set to become even more desperate.
Because the girls are homeless, they'll come in, maybe have a quick wash, get a whole new rig out, put the makeup on, and then they go off. They'll take a couple of bits that they might need in a little plastic bag and then hide them under a bush maybe till they finish work and then take them with them.
They're quite lucky tonight because it's a nice night, just getting dark at the moment, but it is quite warm out. I mean, in winter it must be a different story.
It's horrendous in the winter. It's just, it's heartbreaking. They're out all night. Majority of them, as I say, are homeless. Some of the girls actually sleep in the grounds locally.
As the night drew in, all the girls left to start a long stretch on the street. For me, probably the most harrowing evening I'd experienced since becoming a journalist was over. I discussed the night's events with Lynn Matthews from the Outreach Project as we headed back home.
Okay, well, it's just coming up to midnight now. I'm utterly drained and also quite shell-shocked by what I've seen tonight. Is this a normal night?
Yeah. I mean, there's never anything such as a normal night, but, you know, the main problem is that you're driving away, you're leaving vulnerable women on the streets with nowhere to go, no homes, no houses, you know, no nice clean sheets to sleep in. And this is a major problem in this city. Is homelessness is a huge problem. And what we really need is a hostel which is specifically staffed with drugs workers who have the expertise to actually help these women and get them out of their life. Once you get them stabilised, you get them accommodation, you know, it's amazing how it can improve their lives. But the housing situation at the moment is just appalling, you know, and it's quite heartbreaking to actually walk away and leave sometimes very young women at the mercy of the streets and to everything else that's going on in the city.
I mean, I'm seeing some of the girls walking away now and I just, you know, I've only spoke to them for 5 minutes and I'm worrying about what are they going to be doing tonight? Are they going to be safe? I mean, for you, it must be awful.
Yeah, it is. You know, that's part of the stress of the job. You feel so frustrated and so helpless sometimes. What we're doing really is only putting a sticking plaster over things, you know. It's going to require a huge amount of money so that these women can be accommodated and looked after properly, you know, with people who care, because at the end of the day, these are somebody's daughters.
Somebody's daughter, mother or grandmother, just like Anne-Marie Foy. Her killer is still out there, but if only she'd been able to break free.
Same journey each night, same circle, and nothing's changed from when I was clean for 2.5 years, and when I come back I thought, oh, it might be different, but it hasn't, nothing changes. It's all the same, everyone doing the same thing, day in, day out. I'm just gutted that I'm back here.
When did you first start then? I mean, how old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
46 now, 25 when I started.
You look amazing for 46, you really, really
really do. I mean,
I don't know how. I've had some bad things happen to me.
If, you know, you could get out of it, would you? Because, I mean, you're certainly not the sort of person who, if you're in town, you would never look at you and think you were the street.
It's like it's not getting out of it. I've got out of it. It's staying out of it.
Part of the problem is, I suppose, most of your friends are still working the streets and you may be tempted to go back and see them and then get back into it.
Yeah. A lot of them, you know, are still there. But this time round, I just totally came back into it after being clean for 2.5 years and just went right back into it.
Just your normal life, like your relationships, you're able to have normal relationships even though you work the streets. I mean, it must be tough.
I know what we see, and it makes you see a side of men that is there, and they disgust you. And I couldn't have a normal relationship with a man, you know, the experiences I've had, and I've seen what they're like. You know, I just think some of them are low, but not all men are the same.
Red Light Liverpool. Liverpool. Liverpool.